Part 1. Cannibal Galaxies. 1. Sympathetic Magic.
When he was very young, no more than 200 or 300 years old, he watched a man paint shapes upon a wall. The painter used his fingers as brushes, and the skull cups of animals as his pots. He painted antelope and bison, side on, mid-leap. Startled, deer broke and ran across the wall. The painter drew men, too. They had bows and spears. He had never seen anyone paint a man before. He was very young. It was not art or decoration. It wasn't a memorial of the hunt they had conducted the day before. It wasn't a record of something that had been. That would have been a waste of valuable pigments. They had their memories for that. Watching intently, he understood the painter was painting tomorrow. It was a statement of intention, of what would be. The painter was making a plan and executing it. He was imposing his will. This, the painter was showing them, the antelope, the bison, the men, this will be. The animals will break and run, like so. We will be here. These are the bows and spears we will carry. This, as his fingers moved from spear to antelope, this will be the path the spear will follow. This is where it will strike, this flank here. This will be our kill. Watching, he understood that this was sympathetic magic, a ritual rehearsal to vouchsafe that what was once imagined would later come to pass. What was set out here on the wall in pigment would happen in life tomorrow. The antelope would not evade and get away, for here, see, it was already struck and dead. The man was modelling the future. To sanctify this, to commit to this specific configuration of tomorrow, the painter dipped his hand into a pot and pressed it, palm flat, against the wall. He left his mark, the mark of himself on his plan. This is what will happen, and with my hand I signify it. It cannot be undone. The antelope is already dead. For this version of tomorrow to fail, the gods would need to turn against mankind and undo the laws of the world. Laws which they had promised could not be undone. By then, even so young, he had already learned to distrust gods, to distrust even the existence of gods. But the natural laws of the world seemed to operate, whether there were gods or not. He watched the man paint, and he learned to plan. It was, in every sense, a revelation. He learned that a plan might secure the future, and it might be the work of one man, and to be certain of its success, it had proudly to bear the mark of his hand. His handprints have been on his work ever since. He has been modelling the future for over 30 millennia. He told me that story himself years ago. I look at his hands now, hands that have since held the galaxy in their palms. I observe the fingers twitching slightly. Very few people are permitted to stand this close to him. Few indeed are even admitted into his presence, much less allowed to approach so near that they are able to notice such subtle signs of human suffering. But I am his regent, his adviser, his confidant. I am supposed to stay close to him. It is what he requires of me. So I have been as near to him as his shadow for a very long time. Those hands, those great and capable hands, they are sheathed in aurumite, not because it is golden and regal, but because it is almost quantum inert, and thus most efficacious for psionic sculpting and the manipulation of immaterial forces. Bare skin would be better, more precise and conductive. I know he has touched the immaterium with bare hands and a bared mind many times, but even he has his limits. The saturation of immaterial power now stands at such a level that direct contact would scald his flesh if he but brushed against it. Longer exposure would sear the meat off him, boil his blood and fuse him to the seat he occupies. So there he sits, armoured and warded in gold, silent and still like some graven idol. No. Worse. I fear he resembles the gaudy chieftain kings and prophet monarchs of the past, the petty upstarts and megalomaniac bullies who carved dominions out of the carcass of humanity and built frivolous nations and comparisoned themselves in jewels and precious metals and set crowns upon their heads and declared themselves more than mortal. They were not, and he scorned them all, chastised them for their hubris, and had them cast down by actions direct or indirect. He has dismantled nations and ended dynasties, usurped tyrants and dictators, razed palaces and cauterized bloodlines. He has painted the walls of innumerable throne rooms with blood and left thrones empty. He cannot leave this one. I wait forever in the silence at the foot of the great dais. There is no one else close enough to heed what I notice, except for Uzcarel, Ophite, and Caecaltus Dusk, the exquisite ogres who stand watch either side of the steps. But the Legio Custodes proconsuls face outwards, immobile as sculpture, their backs towards him. They do not see what I see. They do not see his fingers tremble. And subtle signs, be they traces of suffering or otherwise, are my art. Signs, symbols, signifiers, sigils, these are my instruments, the diacritical marks of reality through which I discern the true text of the world. I am his sigilite. And I have fulfilled that role since this age began. It is now about to end. Both my long service to him and this very age itself. Because his sons are coming to kill him.